Welcome to Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. It's like coffee with an analyst, but there's no actual coffee. Each episode, we interviewed an expert in the field of law enforcement analysis to share their career-defining stories and to get their insights on the world. Please join us on recognizing and learning from these brilliant minds as we define the law enforcement analysis profession one episode at a time.
Thank you for joining me. I hope many aspects of your life are progressing. My name is Jason Alder, and today our guest has 10 years of law enforcement analysis experience. She's a multi-award-winning analyst and currently the president of MARCAN, the Mid-American Regional Crime Analysis Network. She's another officer-turned-analyst representing the state of Kansas. Please welcome Adrian Galbrick. Adrian, how are we doing?
Thanks. I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
I am doing well. How's the weather in Kansas these days?
It's actually really nice. It'll get a little colder on Thanksgiving, but today I think the high is just under 60, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, not too shabby. All right. Still got time.
Yes. Come January, February, it'll be a totally different story.
All right. So how did you discover the law enforcement analysis profession?
So my journey to where I'm at now is a little bit of a curvy line, if you will. When I went to college, I actually went for a totally different reason. I started with the plan of being the next crocodile hunter. So I was a zoology major. My freshman year, I realized at my school, we had to take a mix of classes and I really was not great at botany. So zoology was not going to be in the cards. And growing up, I had always been interested in law enforcement. So I changed my major to psychology with a minor in criminology, kind of with that track in mind. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. It was easy to go to school. I love the classes. I actually interned with the U.S. Marshals and the ATF. So my plan was always to go sworn, and I wanted to go sworn at the local level. And that's exactly what I did. I left college with my degree and I went and got started with Overland Park Police Department as an officer. And it was a great experience. What I'll say is that I absolutely hated shift work. Midnight shift was never a thing that I should have thought I could have done. You know, it was one of those growing up, I never stayed up all night. But when you're 21, 22 years old, you think life will change and it'll be different. Mm-hmm. And it didn't for me. So with shift work really not fitting well with me, I left the profession and went back to get my master's degree. Honestly, that was kind of a, oh my gosh, what am I going to do moment. So I was buying myself some time, but I got my master's degree in psychology. And by the time I ended and got that degree, a local department here, Olathe, had an opening for a crime analyst. At the time, my sister worked there. So just because of their nepotism stuff, I couldn't get into that job. But it really opened a door for me because I was able to talk to Don Colossius, who was there at the time. And she pointed me over to Susan at Shawnee Police Department, because she had a internship program. Well, it was more like a volunteering program. So I could kind of get my foot in the door and get some experience there. And that's what really led me straight to where I am today.
So what year was this about?
Oh, gosh. So it was about like 2012-ish, early 2012, okay. I'd say. Okay. 2011, maybe.
And then I was just, when you were talking about zoology, I was like, when did the crocodile hunter die?
Oh my gosh.
I was like, did that influence your decision? Like, no, oh, no. You could get killed on this. I'm out. Like,
no, God, I loved it. And I still, to this day, I love animals. That's always been a passion of mine. So no, everything about the crocodile hunter, I thought was amazing. And my gosh, I have kids now and they watch stuff like Wildcrats and it's just as fun for me to watch as them. So it, like I said, it was always a passion, but gosh, the program I was in at my school was like pre-vet, pre-med, and I just did not have the probably maturity and brain power at the time to really focus on that. And law enforcement, it was just fun. The psychology stuff, it was just fun. So it was a really good experience.
Yeah, it's so daunting when you look back at it. And I think about people 18 years old trying to decide what they want to do with the rest of their life. And oh, then yeah. You get out there and you think you're going one direction and you experience a little bit of the world and you figure out that, hey, that's not necessarily for me. So you go in a total different direction. And it seems like it's not until you're about 24, 25 that you really figure things out to where you're comfortable moving forward.
Oh, I totally agree. I'm always surprised because around here, they'll have stuff at the high schools and even at the middle schools where they do kind of career fairs. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I know in my head, I was on the crocodile hunter track, but I was like, there's no way to really know what you want to do at that point. I think it's more just about giving them a chance to talk to people and get used to it. But yeah, whenever I see it, I'm like, oh, give it 5-10 years and see if you still think the same thing.
Yeah. And then how did you get the internship there in undergrad?
That's kind of a funny story in itself. So I had to do an internship for my degree. Mm-hmm. And I went to school in Ohio. So I was looking for a summer internship here in the Kansas City area. And I have some family members that were longtime lawyers and things like that. So they knew a lot of people, you know, in the legal field and whether it's enforcement or on the judicial side. And then the company my dad actually worked for had some ties with a former ATF agent. So we knew a couple people. So I was able to kind of do my application, send it in, but it obviously helped that I knew some people that could say, hey, you should interview her. So I was able to go in and interview for both and was fortunate enough to get both. So I would split my time and do 3 days at one and 2 days at the other. And it was a blast. I can't even tell you how much fun it was. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So what kind of tasks were you doing as an intern?
So with the ATF, I was a part of their ceasefire task force, which was in charge of the felon in possession cases. So a lot of those, I was reviewing cases and kind of looking at things and just basically shadowing the agents so I could go on search warrants and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then on the marshal side, I was able to do a little bit of everything. I got to do some courtroom stuff. I got to do transportation, some of their fugitive task force kind of things. So again, it was a variety of things and it was never a dull day. It's one of those that you get in there and you're like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is awesome. Cause it was that much fun.
So coming out of that, then you became sworn, but were you eventually thinking you would go sworn, then go federal agent?
That was always an option. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to start on the local side because everybody I talked to would say things like, hey, the best officers, the best federal agents, they all have their roots at the local level because that's where you learn all sorts of skill sets, whether it's tactics and, you know, just dealing with people and interviewing. All of those things happen at the local level and then can be a huge asset if you go federal. I'm from this area though, so I was kind of on the fence because I knew going federal would mean I'd probably have to move. So I was kind of in that mindset of, hey, let's see how local goes, and knowing that federal could be a possibility.
And then with the police academy, when you look back now, I mean, what were some things that you think of, maybe things that you found particularly hard or maybe something that surprised you?
Oh my gosh. So police academy, it's funny because the department where I'm at now, we actually have two of my classmates are here. And so it's funny, we kind of reminisce, we have our academy picture and everything. Things I think about, it's all the fun times. I mean, we did have some really hard stuff where you're getting pepper sprayed, you're having to do firearms qualifications. All of those can be pretty high stress situations. But I really just think back on the camaraderie and all the silly things that, you know, we'd come back from scenarios and somebody would be like, oh my gosh, you can't even believe what I just said. Thank God this is just practice, you know, and stuff like that. It was a cool experience. It was challenging, but it's something I'm pretty proud that I accomplished. And it's funny because I did the academy prior to my sister going into law enforcement. So she came into it right after I was graduating. So I think that kind of speaks for itself when she kind of saw what was happening and how fun it was and what a cool way you can serve your community. I think that sealed the deal for her on wanting to join as well.
And your sister's name?
It's Justine.
And same last name?
No. So, and she's actually out of law enforcement now. It's again that Olathe PD nepotism policy got us again, because I married an Olathe officer and their policy was crazy strict at the time. So one of them was going to have to leave and she got a job offer on the private side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she's out of it.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm sure there's reasons for that policy being so strict, right? I always find it fascinating when you look at a policy that's really strict and specific and like, okay, somebody did something specific to get that policy.
That's the thing. And it was citywide at the time. So like, even if I married a firefighter or anybody, one of them would have had to leave. I think they've since adjusted a little bit because they were losing really, really good people. My sister was an incredible, she was a detective at the time. She was great at her job. And I think they really missed, you know, losing people like her. But yeah, so I think smartly they adjusted it a bit. Right. But who knows who that policy was written after? Who knows?
Yeah. So take me through your thought process. You're an officer, you're hating third shift, and you're about to make a pretty big decision to leave the police department with not necessarily knowing exactly where you're going.
Yep. It was one of the hardest decisions of my life. You know, I was young and that was really where I was always gearing towards. I did great in academy. So it seemed like everything was going right. And then you get out there, the third shift did not work for me. I could not get a rhythm on sleeping. And it just became very clear that it was not going to be a good fit for me job wise. And it, you know, when you're 22-ish years old, it kind of felt like the end of the world. But what I will say is I had some fantastic FTOs at Overland Park that were very supportive. I have a very supportive family. So even though I was leaving that kind of with a, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do, this is what I planned on, it was, looking back, as seamless of a transition as it could have been, where I was like, okay, let's go. We'll go back to school for a little bit, you know, get in debt a little bit. Everybody loves that, trying to pay for school loans. But it really bought me some time to mature a little more and see where would I fit in. And the funny thing is, even though I was with Overland Park as an officer, it's probably just because I was trying to take it all in and I was a new officer that I didn't realize it. But I really didn't know that much about crime analysis, which is funny because Overland Park has always had a very robust, they've had a crime analyst unit forever, or so it seems. So it's kind of funny to me that even though I was with Overland Park, I really didn't get an idea of the field until I was a little bit out of it and had some perspective. And then, of course, talked to Don Clossy's at Olathe.
So you start volunteering, you start getting exposed to analysis, and take us back to that point, what you were feeling, because you're an officer, you're coming in, you're volunteering.
It was an interesting experience. Again, we're a small area around here, so one of the guys I went to academy with was at Shawnee too. So to some degree, it was, you know, really nice to see those people, and it was a little bit of a homecoming because I felt comfortable, but it was a totally new way of looking at things. Because I am kind of sciencey, throw it back to my zoology stuff, it was a natural fit for me. So with the combination of the, you know, human behavior and sociology and criminology, kind of bringing it full circle and sitting down and doing analysis felt really natural. I also thought that it helped me get some perspective just since I'd done the police academy and I had been on the street. I kind of had a feel for the jargon officers use and what they are interested in hearing. So I appreciated having that perspective too. But it was definitely one of those, all right, I know I like doing this, but at least in our area, openings didn't always happen that often. So it was one of those, how long is this going to take me to actually get a job?
Yeah. So, I mean, that had to be an advantage for you, the communication aspect of it, because I think newer analysts, and even I struggled with it when I first started, is being able to communicate and being confident in communicating with officers and to go up there and have some general knowledge of what you're talking about.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, it helped. And I laugh because I love law enforcement. It's kind of my people. I can joke with the best of them and I'm, you know, is cynical and all of that. So I fit in well. My personality fits in well, which definitely helped me. And then again, yeah, having that comfort level of, hey, I know some of you, I know how we operate. Let's just do this together. It worked well for me.
Okay. So then you become a crime analyst at Independence Police Department.
Yep. Independence, it's a city on the Missouri side for us. So I'd started all on the Kansas side. Now I jumped to the Missouri side. The cool thing about Independence is it's a busy city. So as an analyst, you know, you're having to use some of those skills. I couldn't read every single report that came through like I try to do here at Lenexa. So you had to have the skills of what lends itself to patterns, what is really need to know things, how can I help the officers best? So it was fun in that respect. At the time, Jennifer Brady was working there. She was one of the other analysts that was in the office. We had a couple more that were at HIDA, but she was a great resource for me and kind of showing me the ropes at Independence. Again, a fun department, lots of stuff that analysts can really sink their teeth into. And it was one of those that I'm like, this is a city that really needs good analysis. So it was exciting in that respect.
But you weren't there that long, right? You were there less than a year before you transitioned to Lenexa.
Correct. So I knew as much as I loved the opportunity at Independence, I always kind of wanted to come back to the Kansas side, just because, again, that's where I was from. I know the area so well. And like I said, those openings just did not come up in our area very much. So it timed out where Lenexa opened their position, and I knew that they were looking to revamp their unit, which was a pretty cool, attractive opportunity to me to kind of start something from the ground up. And the reputation of Lenexa is fantastic here. So we're known for being proactive, for having access to training and technology and all sorts of things that, you know, Independence, we did not have as much ability to do as civilians. So I kind of saw it as, hey, if I really want to jump in, if I want to kind of spread my wings, moving to Lenexa would probably be the next best move for me.
So when you start, this is about 2013, then when you're starting with Lenexa, what kind of tasks are you doing in the beginning?
Well, one thing that I love about here, so they've had analysts for a long time, but my predecessor, he kind of had the things that he usually did and routine reports, which worked well for them. But when I came in, they said, hey, we think that there's a lot more that an analyst can do. We're just not 100% sure what that is. So we really need your help to understand that, which I really appreciated because I think that can be hard for people to say. And I was fortunate enough to get the job, and they were very receptive when I said, hey, I think, you know, we need some software so that I can go through cases and make notes and do things like that. We probably need to revamp our crime map. And it just grew from there, because one of the things that Lenexa is known for is they'll really try to give you the skill set. So like, you need training on this. Okay, go for it. Now spread your wings. Tell us, what do you need? What can we do? How can we do it better? And it's grown a ton over the past 9 or so years.
Yeah. So what was the software that they picked up for you?
It was off my recommendation, and it was Bear's Workstation, which is now owned by LexisNexis.
Yeah, that's a good software to track cases and make connections and flag things that you think are related. So
I have never found, and we have looked, because I know LexisNexis is, I don't believe they're selling the workstation anymore, like licenses to it. I think they're planning on kind of working through their AVCC and trying to do something on there. So it's funny because I've never found anything as amazing. And I think a lot of it is because Sean Bear was an officer and then he was an analyst. So he had a very unique perspective.
Yes.
Yes, he did.
He's a programmer at heart that became an officer and an analyst.
And I got a realtor
all kinds of stuff. Whatever he touches turns to gold, it seems like.
I know. And we use that software to this day, and I will be sad if it ever stops working. I'll be so sad.
This brings us to your analyst badge story. And for those that may be new to the show, the analyst badge story is the career-defining case or project that an analyst works on. And for you, this is 2017 there at Lenexa, and you're listening to the radio and you take advantage of the situation.
Yeah, it's one of those cases that I think will always stick with several of us here at the police department. So in 2017, and I love this story because it really displays just good analytical work and good collaboration with our sworn side. So I had my own radio, I still do, and I just kind of scan our channels on it. And of course, since I'm reviewing reports every day, I'm seeing the common names that are coming through, and we get a radio call on a suspicious activity And I recognized the name of the person. He had been at one of our, well, we'd contacted him several times, but in this particular instance, we had a business from our area calling saying, hey, this person I think was sleeping in one of the storage units here and he has two kids with him. So I hear the name and kind of start looking because I'd been primed just from the other things. We had some officer safety concerns just from the contact. So I was started looking into it. And I am listening to the radio, and it's just one of those times where, again, a pretty innocuous call, just a suspicious activity, but it just didn't feel right to me. It was one of those calls that you say, I don't like it. So I walked down the hall. We're right by our detective area. So I walked down the hall to the detective sergeant and actually one of the detectives that ended up working the case. And I said, hey, this is what we've got. You know, it could be absolutely nothing, but I don't like it. The more information we heard, you know, he was the only one with the two very young children. One was a newborn baby. He'd been telling people that his wife was dead, but nobody really knew. So again, it just kind of started spiraling. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that I could walk into my detective sergeant's office. And the minute I told them that, they said, yep, we need to figure something out. We at least need to do a check the welfare. And by this time, the subject had left our city. So it took some considerable legwork for the detective and her partner to track things down. And at the same time, you know, patrol was kind of standing by at the storage facility because it seemed like he might come back. So we had a lot of moving parts, but it was nice to see everybody working together well. And ultimately, he ended up showing back up at the storage facility with the children. And we were called back out there because the business was, again, keeping an eye out. And long story short, he had the dismembered body of his wife in a cooler at the storage unit.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, and he was trying to leave the area. So I think that we definitely were able to get those kids and get them into a much safer situation. We were able to start investigations on what happened to his wife. And ultimately, it led to him being sentenced in our county with three felony counts of sexual exploitation of a child related to some things that they found on his phone, and then child endangerment and things like that. His wife was dismembered on the Missouri side. So, and there was conflicting stories that he gave on if she killed herself or if she died in childbirth or things like that. So we didn't deal with that side of it. But one of the things that I really take away from it is that as collectively, our agency was able to take those kids and put them in a much safer situation and at least give Jessica, his wife's family, some closure as to where she was. So that's always one that I think will stick with me forever.
Yeah. So do you know whether he was eventually charged with murder or manslaughter on the Missouri side?
Last I heard, they were looking on the Missouri side. He was going to be charged with something like dismemberment of a corpse. Mm-hmm. He admitted to dismembering her after she was deceased for a couple days in a hotel room, like where the kids were too. And he also admitted, I mean, you can look up stories on it online where he had like taken pictures with her body and the children and stuff like that. So I think that they were never able to determine a definite cause of death. So it was more of a, again, dismemberment of a corpse type situation.
Yeah. So do you think the baby was born in the hotel?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then the original call, the radio call that you were listening to, it was that made by the storage owner?
It was an employee at the storage facility. Yep.
I wonder how serious it would have been taken if you weren't had the prior sworn officer experience. You hope it wouldn't matter, but I have a feeling that you walking in there and saying it just doesn't feel right held some weight with those detectives.
I don't know if it had so much to do with me being sworn as much as the buy-in that I had gained in those 4 years since I started. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that I was able to show the importance of crime analysis and what we were able to do. And that made it a lot easier to walk in there. We have another full-time, we technically have like 2.5 analysts, I like to say. So our other full-time analyst is Lindsay Calvillo. And I have no doubt she's been here since February 2020. If she walked in and did the same thing, they would take it as seriously. I think it's just a matter of showing people that you know what you're talking about and that it has value.
Yeah, that's good to hear. All right. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your advice to the analysts, get into talking to some of the training that you've taken. and talk about MARCAN and the IACA and get into some of the awards that you've won.
Okay, that sounds great.
You're listening to Analyst Talk with Jason Elder. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dawn Colossius. I just want you to know that when you hear or you think as an analyst, they don't know what they want us to do. Always remember, you don't have to wait. Show them, tell them, and be value added.
You didn't do the dishes?
Well, no, I was busy doing other chores. But my completed chores is up 5 in the last 7 days.
Yeah, but you're still down 13 over the last 28 days.
Well, I see your shopping purchases is up 20% this month.
My spending is still down year to date. In fact, my black shoe purchases are half of what they were this time last year.
Well, thank goodness last year wasn't a normal year.
Plus, I bought you new underwear, so your clothes purchases is up 40% this month compared to last month.
Well, wait, there were no clothes purchases the previous month, Miss Perfect. I didn't know you had the ability to divide by zero.
You should be happy. Your temperature-led policing program has worked great in this house. I have not touched your precious thermostat in the last 6 months.
Millions of homes in the U.S. are impacted by people wanting to be comfortable in their homes. Temperature-led policing. Control the temperature. Control the cost.
Welcome back, Adrian. Now I'd like to get your advice on some training that you've taken. It's funny when I read resumes of analysts that have been around for a while, and if you do a CV version and you list every single training you've ever taken, you know, you get to like 3 or 4 pages of,
oh, I know,
40 hours here, 20 hours here, and it doesn't take you very long to get up to 1,000 hours of training. And so certainly you've had the opportunity to take some training over the years. So I wanted to take advantage of that and get your recommendations.
Oh, sure. I love training. And I'm pretty fortunate because Lenexa is super supportive of it too. So my go-to training is always the IACA conference. And I promise I'm not biased because, you know, obviously I've served on committees and things. I love the IACA's training conference. And I remember as a brand new analyst, it's almost embarrassing. The first conference that I went to, I remember walking through the lobby and Christopher Bruce was there. And it just makes me laugh thinking about this. I remember walking by him. I had seen him in trainings. I think DDAX had come or something. So I'd seen him, but of course I've always held him in super high regard. And so I thought there's no way that Christopher Bruce knows who I am. But as he walked by, he's like, "Hey, Adrian, how are you?" I had such a deer in the headlights. Like, I cannot even imagine the look that I probably gave him. And it was one of those like, oh my gosh, what do I say? I'm not sure what to do. If I remember right, I don't think I said anything.
I was going to say the worst thing you could do is not say
anything.
Even,
I think it was one of those like, you know, just super like took you back to middle school, kind of awkward. And I'm sure Christopher was like, I don't know what her problem is, but I think it highlights to me like just what a close community we are, even though the IACA is so big, you know, those people that you see as being the end all be all, whether it's Christopher Bruce or Jim Mallard or Mary Berticelli and Annie Mitchell, there's Albert Mesa. There's so many, I could just keep going. They really make themselves available to you. And as a new analyst, it's so nice to know that you can call on people and ask advice and do things that they've done a million times over. You can get that guidance. So I love the IACA conference for networking. I still need to find Christopher and actually joke with him about that. It's one of those things that I'm like, oh God, I feel so bad, yet also laughing at myself about. But no, going to those conferences is a fantastic opportunity to get exposure to brand new things that are happening, to different techniques. You will find somebody there who has done what you're trying to do and they can help you problem solve it. So the IACA training is always kind of one of my go-tos. Lately, we've been taking a lot of time and training in things like open source intelligence. So we've gone to things like the Techno Security and Digital Safety Conference. And that's a really great one that we've enjoyed. And it's been really good for our detectives too. other than that, I think just keeping an eye out for what you're interested in. One of my favorite things about this field is that there's always something to learn. So I've been doing this for, you know, for a minute, for about 10 years, but there's always something new. Lately, I've been really into Esri's ArcGIS Online platform and what that can offer our officers and our analysts. So I've been really into that. So, you know, keep an eye out, be open to new things because our field is always expanding.
So but back to the open source intelligence training, is that something that you would recommend for all analysts, even if they're in maybe of a more classical crime analyst task that they're doing?
I think so. And it's for a couple reasons. So here at Lenexa, we do crime and intel analysis. So we do a little bit of everything. But even for those analysts that are more just strictly maybe crime analysts or strategic, I really try to encourage people to advocate for themselves. You might not know how you can use some of that open source stuff until you start learning about it and until you start using it. And you might find something where maybe your department or your agency isn't using it as much. Well, you can help fill that void. You know, it's one of those, we all have job descriptions and those are very important, but don't feel like you're completely fenced in by it. You can grow in your role. And I would hope that's what we all do, if that's what you want. So yeah, I think that doing open source intelligence is a really great thing for any analyst. Plus, it also kind of helps you get some perspective on like what information about you or your officers or your coworkers could be out there. So you can kind of educate them on that on the flip side.
And then you've done some studying yourself on digital safety. Did you take training for that? Or is that just something that you've done as a hobby?
So a little bit of both. Through some of those trainings, one of the detectives and I, her name's Shannon Murphy, we started looking at stuff and we were doing a lot of open source kind of things for just our regular job. We would be going through and there's just a wealth of information on people out there. And we kind of stopped and looked at each other and we're like, gosh, if you can find this much, what can we find on ourselves or our coworkers? And this was, I would say it was right around Ferguson when we really started looking at it. So it was kind of the moment. And what we found is there's a ton of information. A lot of our coworkers said the kind of the canned line of, I'm not that interesting. I don't have anything to hide. I'm not that exciting. And so what we tried to encourage them to think of, and really anybody who would listen, because we've talked about this to our city partners and to some citizens, is it's not so much about what you have to hide. It's all of the things you have to protect. So what can you do to kind of take control of your online footprint and what steps can you take to be a little more secure, whether you're trying to avoid ID theft or people knowing where you live, whatever it is, you know, there are things that you can do. So yes, that detective and I created an in-house training for our officers and we gave that to some outside agencies too. But then we also, like I said, morphed it so we could talk to like our city partners about it and our Citizens Police Academy and things like that.
It's not hard, right? I mean, we're not talking about stuff that was going to take you weeks to figure out and change.
Oh, no. You know, I think it's not hard. Well, I walk that back a little bit. Sometimes getting your information off the internet is very hard. Oh, okay. So sometimes you have to do other techniques like trying to bury it. So seeding false information, things like that. But talking about it and understanding it, I think is pretty straightforward. Now it can open a floodgate for people. I've had people go, you know, I had no idea how it's overwhelming. So I think that if you take it in chunks and you kind of work at your comfort level, some people want to be a lot more secure than others, then you'll find a happy balance. Lindsay, our other analyst here, she actually just finished creating a whole kind of online safety for parents and families, which is a whole nother like area under the umbrella that I think is really, really important for people to hear. So if you kind of take it in chunks, I think it's much more digestible.
You know, finishing up with Lenexa Police Department, then I see here you have won several awards, either with the city or with the police department, won the Vision Award in 2018 and the Innovation Award in 2014. What did you do to win those awards?
Oh my gosh. Let's see, the Vision Award, that was a city award. Mm-hmm. And that had to do, we started the DDAX program here. Okay. He was a captain at the time. He's now a major. He and I both won that award. And if I remember right, it was primarily about DDAX. And again, just bringing a strategic approach and trying to improve the quality of life in a certain area of our city. It's not something that we had tried before. And I think that it's a really huge benefit to everybody, community and police department alike. So if anybody's ever considered doing something like that, I think it's an amazing model. The Innovation Award, let's see, in 2014, that was the police department. And that is given to somebody in my department that continues to find ways to work smarter, not harder. So that was about a year after I started here. So it was a lot of the, hey, let's get a software program. Let's try to do things to streamline so we're not constantly working harder than we need to. That's really what the Innovation Award was about.
I missed one. And there's a Respect for the Law Award in 2014?
Yes, that's from, so our Optimist Club in the area every year, they like to give an award for respect for law. And in 2014, I was fortunate enough to receive it. And again, I think it was a lot of the revamping of the crime analyst program here and getting it started off on a new foundation to really take us into the future.
Are you all still doing DDACs?
We are.
You mentioned revamping the program. What were some of the things that you've done?
So, well, bringing some innovations, whether it's software, things like that, that's one of them. We also started an internship program while I was here. That was super important to me because that really helped me get started in crime analysis. And again, if you watch the IACA forums at all, that's a question that comes up a bunch. Hey, I want to get started, but entry level wants experience. What do I do? So it was a way for me to pay it forward. Expanding the unit by another analyst and a half is one of those things that has come. And that's just because of the amount of volume work-wise that I'm doing. So when it was just me, I was handling patrol and investigations and all the administrative stuff. And anybody who knows if you're doing well, people tend to come to you because they're like, hey, I need help with this. I know that you're going to try your hardest to do it. So we kind of had a reputation of never saying no, like, hey, you need help with that? Absolutely. I'm here for you. So all of a sudden that workload becomes huge. And we were fortunate enough to hire Lindsay, like I said, in early 2020, and she was a force multiplier for us. So she brought a lot of experience and expertise and ideas that were really awesome. And again, has expanded what we do to this day. We have a dispatcher at our police department that splits her time, or at least was. We had some staffing issues in dispatch, so she's down there now full time, but she was spending 3 days a week up here, and that was huge. So to kind of take the analyst unit from one person to two and a half, almost three, it's a huge change for a department our size. But again, I think it showed the value that the department saw and what we're doing. You know, we help with cell phone CDR analysis. We're doing the OSINTs. We help with some background checks. We help with training. I mean, you name it, we do it. We actually help with our report to our community. So we're doing like graphics kind of stuff and working in InDesign. We also have gotten into doing like CellBright extractions. Lindsay's actually about to go do a training on that. So she'll be doing extractions and analysis because we have some other analysts in our area doing that. And honestly, I'd encourage if you're an analyst that's interested in something like that, take a look at it, because what we found is a lot of times our detectives were trained on it. Well, our detectives are rotating out, promotion, retirement, whatever, but you kind of have that common consistency of an analyst. So having somebody who's trained in it and can be doing it in some of those ups and downs of personnel changes was really attractive to our commanders. So again, it's the spreading your wings and finding what you can do and how you can do it, and maybe how you can help your department do things more efficiently. That I think is really where we've shown some innovation.
Back to the internship program. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about this a little bit in the prep call, because I feel that every department that has a crime analysis or an intelligence analyst unit should have an intern program. Mm-hmm. And it's that important. It's how both you and I really got our foot in the door. So what would your advice be with either trying to get one started or some of the excuses you might have heard of why departments don't have an internship program?
When it comes to getting started, I think what slows some people down, it's a huge undertaking. To do an internship right is a time commitment, and it's a commitment to training. So, and when I say to do it right, I mean, you know, as nice as it is shadowing somebody, and that absolutely gives them some experience, I'm a big believer in, I want our interns to be doing analytical work. I want them to walk out and be able to tell employers, hey, I've done tactical analysis. Here's an example. I've worked with ArcGIS. Here's an example. That takes a lot of commitment and time. So I would encourage people to reach out to other analysts who have programs. You know, it doesn't mean you have to run your internship all year round and always have somebody in your office. We just do ours right now during the summertime primarily. So it's kind of a set number of weeks. So you can be flexible with it. And also consider that your department might never have thought about it. So sometimes, like for me, we had never had a crime analyst intern. So when I went and said, hey, I'd like to do an internship program, that was brand new to them. Well, what are the benefits? If you're teaching somebody to do something, typically it helps you make sure you're on top of it. Anybody who's taught classes will know you did not know the material well enough till you had to get up there and talk about it to a whole bunch of other people. So I think it gave us a chance to, again, give back, to bring some new people into our department and help them learn. Some of the excuses I've heard are things like, well, they'll be exposed to super sensitive information, which we got around our interns, whether it's a patrol intern or a crime analyst intern, they go through polygraphs, they go through background investigations. They're actually here. They end up being hired by the city because they get paid, which would have been amazing when I was in an internship.
Me too.
But that's a whole other story. But so there are ways around that. And you can always find excuses. But I think ultimately, just in helping our profession, it's up to all of us to help the next generation. I want the people who work here and the people who come through our internship program, my ultimate goal is for them to be way better analysts than me. That would be awesome. Our last intern, in fact, her name's Rhianne Drayton. She's from down in Florida. And she's getting her master's degree right now. Whoever hires her is going to be incredibly lucky. She is brilliant and dedicated, and she has so many things going for her. And, you know, without having an internship opportunity, it's hard for people like that to get into the field. So I really think we owe it to the next generation to help them along, because I know I had help.
A lot of folks are getting certificate programs in analysis, and all those certificate programs require an internship or a volunteer opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And it's so hard. I mean, when we had our last process, we had over 100 applications from across the US. So you can tell these students are looking for internships and they're super hard to find. And yeah, if it's a degree requirement, you feel extra bad for them because there's only so many spots they can come.
That's for sure. So I do hope that it gets easier. And I think that's really where some of these associations can help. Right. Mm-hmm. I think they could be a bridge in between the university and the police department. Just take the excuses away. You know, you mentioned some of them, just like, okay, what, why don't you do it? Okay, here, let's grease the wheels a little bit. Let's get this thing moving. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of associations, you are currently the MARCAM president. Mm-hmm. And I am glad this time that I said Mid-American. Because the first time it might have been Susan's. Susan's, I think, when I first introduced her episode, I said Mid-Atlantic for some reason.
Starts with an A.
And of course, I didn't pick it up and I did the intro. She said, hey, by the way, you said Mid-Atlantic there. And I was like, oh, okay. So I had to quickly redo it. I didn't leave it in the production, but I was thinking about that this morning when I was preparing these notes.
That's funny. So, you're lucky you didn't just say it because you were thinking it.
Yeah, that's true. That I've done that plenty of times. That's why I was glad you didn't tell me with your last name. If people will tell me, oh, I usually get this. And, oh my goodness. For some reason, I'll get it great in practice.
Right.
And then once it's live and I'm hitting record, whatever they told me that they usually get is usually what I say. I mean, yep. It's happened about 15 times since I've been doing this podcast. So I don't even ask anymore. I said, oh, don't even tell me because I don't want to hear it because it'll come back and bite me. But anyway, so MARCAM, how long have you been president, first of all?
2 years. So this is the end of my term, technically. We'll have elections here and last time I checked, I don't know if anybody else is running, so I might end up president again, or we might have an election.
No one else wants it. So Adrian, you're up.
Well, yeah, right. No, so I couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah. So what are some things you're proud of that you were able to accomplish in the last couple of years?
Marcan, I think, is a really cool organization, and I love it. We actually have really strong ties to the IACA because I know you've talked to like Kyle Stoker. Mm-hmm. He's part of Marcan. He's the training director. Sabrina yeah. Potts. There's so many of us in this area that are also a big part of the IACA. So it's a cool group, and we're a very close group and supportive, which I think makes all the difference because no one of us is the single best analyst in the world, but working together and using each other's strengths, we're an incredible unit. So I love Marcan. A couple of the things that I'm really excited that we were able to do a couple years ago in our metro area, the investigation commander's team for the Kansas side in Johnson County, they decided that they wanted to make a detective boot camp training to kind of help people who were wanting to become detectives or had just become a detective, like, hey, let's give them, you know, a week-long training to help them understand the role and all of the things that are available to them. We were able to get a chunk of that training to dedicate towards crime and intelligence analysis and how that can help new detectives, which to me was a total win because at least in our state for police academy, they don't really cover crime analysis at all. You know, they have a very set number of hours they have to cover and set number of subjects, and crime analysis isn't one of those. So depending on your agency, that detective boot camp might be the first chance they have to really understand how they can harness an analyst's specialties to help in their investigation. So I was really proud that Marcan was able to do that. Marcan was also very much involved in getting a spot for analysts in our training for our Metro Squad school. That's something that covers both the Kansas and Missouri side. And basically, it's a group of investigators that are seasoned detectives from multiple agencies. So if an agency has a major case, a homicide, kidnapping, you name it, if they need help, they can call a Metro Squad. And then all of a sudden, you get this influx of experienced detectives. And typically, analysts would be helping, but we didn't necessarily have a super formal role, definitely not formal enough to be involved in their training for the Metro Squad school. But within the past year, we were able to do that. So I think that's a win, not only for analysts, but just for the squads too, because we can offer a lot to help support those detectives in the investigations.
Are you part of the SOP then, the standard operating procedure? Is that...
So I have not seen the SOP. I'll be the first one to tell you because it's kind of held by that Metro Squad board. We have, the guidance I've been given is that we do have now a formal role. They kind of have a list of, just like they have a list of the seasoned detectives, hey, who are analysts or agencies with analysts that I can kind of, as I'm doing call outs, I can call them. And so that's a really exciting way to kind of give back and get exposed to some cases that you might not get exposed to otherwise. What else? We've also done a decent amount of outreach. COVID kind of threw us off because of, you know, just everything that came with it. But we were doing a lot of effort in reaching out to colleges and universities in our area, kind of like what you were talking about before, to educate them in the profession, talk to them about internships and answer some questions. Because even though there are a lot of crime analysis programs kind of popping up, I still find when I talk to students that a lot of them don't know that much about it. They might have covered it a little bit, but not nearly as in depth as what you can if you have an analyst there talking to you about it and answering your questions.
And you've done, not just you, Marcan has done a lot of research on justifying a new analyst. And a matter of fact, I think it was just, it was last week, I want to say that IACA had posted the different stats that if you meet this threshold, it means that you need another analyst kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was appropriate. So what are some of the justifications that you guys all came up with for hiring a new analyst?
You know, it's funny. It runs with some of the stuff we've been doing, whether it's the detective boot camp or like the Metro Squad trainings. Once you get out there and start showing agencies that don't have an analyst what an analyst can do, my experience has been all of them kind of sit there and go, oh my gosh, we didn't know somebody could do this. You know, what else can you do? Tell me about it. And so if you can show them what you're doing, it's very easy to justify. I helped post a job opening for a agency in the metro area, Grandview. It's on the Missouri side, and they're posting for their first crime analyst. And again, part of that was talking through the justification of, okay, how many calls for service do you have? What is your department makeup? What kind of crimes are you having? And then talking about how an analyst can help you. And again, my experience has been a lot of the agencies, it's pretty easy for them to justify it. Sometimes harder to then say, okay, how do we get the money? Is it a grant? Do we have to ask our city council or whoever for a new position? That obviously gets a little more difficult, but being able to show the expanse of things that we can help with really speaks for itself.
Do you have like some go-tos, the benefits of analysis? Is there like 4 or 5 points there that, you know, you're in the elevator, someone's asking you, hey.
And I have to give my spiel.
Yeah.
The first one is always, it helps your agency work safer and smarter. That's number one for me. It keeps people safer, whether it's your officers or your citizens, and it helps you direct patrol in a more effective way. So that's number one. Number two, it takes pressure off of some of your sworn personnel because they're kind of trying to do analysis types of stuff. That's kind of what happened on some, like with some of the Metro squads, you see detectives doing things that an analyst does every day instead of going out and doing what they're best at, interviewing and, you know, boots on the ground type of stuff. And so we can help there too. I think it also can help with the transparency to your community because you can talk more intelligently about your stats because you know them better. And you can talk about programs, whether it's something like DDACS that's evidence-based and a cornerstone really of something like intelligence-led policing. Why are we doing it? What's good about it? All of those things that help your community buy into your message and what you're doing because it helps them too. See, that's three. I'm trying to think if there's something else. I give the spiel. It's funny. I have kind of a set folder on my like shared drive that if an agency is like, hey, we're really thinking about getting an analyst, can you send us something like job descriptions or, you know, because a lot of times that helps with justification too when you see what's in there. And I have it like on standby and I'll shoot, I'll give them that. I gave them when we did our hiring process for Lindsay's position, you know, some of the questions we asked analysts in the metro area from a lot of us, obviously from Marcan, are more than willing to go sit on hiring boards because some of the agencies, when it's your very first analyst, again, you kind of don't know what you don't know. So it's nice to have somebody with experience sitting there and helping you ask questions and go through your candidate. So yeah, anytime anybody wants to talk about justifying analysts, I'll talk their ear off.
All right. So, and yeah, we could talk about that for a while, but I am going to move on now. And I do want to briefly talk about your time on the executive board for the IACA. You were secretary, but it was kind of an interesting circumstance how you became secretary of the IACA.
It was. Yeah. So, and that it's funny. I know we talked about it before. I would consider my time on the executive board is kind of a badge story too, though like you said, I got there a little bit of a different way than normal. So I had been serving on IACA committees for a long time. I'd been on the technology committee as the list administrator. And then when Jim Mallard was president, he had been the tech director. So I kind of took over those roles. So again, I'd been involved. And at the time, Brandy Christian was secretary of the IACA, and she ended up having to step down midterm, which left the executive board in a position where they needed an interim secretary, and they needed one fast. And I was approached, and they asked me to get on a phone call, which was kind of a surreal experience for me. Again, I think it's one of those things where you never quite appreciate, I don't know where you're at in your career. I don't think I'm a super experienced analyst compared to some people. And so to get on a phone call with like Annie Mitchell and Jim Mallard and Brandy Christian and be, you know, be sitting on the phone going, oh my gosh, what are they going to ask me? They, you know, these are the people I look up to. It was a surreal experience, but they kind of called me and talked to me. And again, they were familiar with my work on some of the committees. So they thought I'd be a good fit. And when I talked to my commanders here about it, because being on the executive board is a big time commitment, whether you're the secretary or in other roles, it is amazing how much those board members do. And I don't know that they receive enough thanks for it, but it gave me a whole new appreciation. But my commanders here at Lenexa were incredibly supportive. And they said, oh my gosh, absolutely. What a huge opportunity. You have to do it. And they were absolutely right. I got a chance to work with all those people that, you know, I really kind of held in high regard and still do, they're my go-to for questions and things like that. And I got to go overseas. Sam Steiner had a conference in Munich that he was co-leading, and I got to go over there and talk about DDEX, you know, and experience that. I got to go up to Canada. Manny San Pedro was, who is another person who's just an incredible asset to the IACA and a lot of our Canadian partners. It was just such an amazing opportunity to see the association at a larger scale and just see how much we can help the analysts out there. So I lucked out because I didn't have to be elected. I didn't have to go through that stress, like I told you, but oh my gosh, what an incredible experience. The only reason that I didn't run after my term was up is because it just was a huge time commitment, and we didn't have our second analyst here yet, and I was getting swamped, but it's something that I really hope to do again in the future. It's just, like I said, Mary Berticelli, everybody on the board, they're incredible, and it was fun. Oh, and I also got to go to the IACP conference, which... Wow. There's no way I would have ever, you know, had a reason to go as an analyst where I'm at. And that was a pretty cool experience too. It was pretty incredible to see it from kind of the commander standpoint, the executives and the chiefs and the all of those. It was a really neat experience.
So if you decide to run again, you can call me up and we can make an announcement on the show here.
Yeah, that'd be exciting.
But it's funny, you said you were approached. There's been several times that I was approached for different stuff. And I, in the beginning, I'm like, I'm very excited that you to be thought of. And I was like, oh, that's great. And then I always joke around. I was like, yeah, but I was like the 21st person that they ask. I was always the dumb enough one that actually said yes, right?
Thankfully, I don't know what number I was. And I will say that Brandy was super forthcoming about like, hey, this is going to be a lot of work. But it was definitely that feeling of like, I know I have to say yes, but oh my gosh, I have no idea what I am like biting off, but here we go.
All right, well, let's finish up with personal interest then. And so I like the way you described this. So you're into fit outdoors based on your zoology days and the fishing, hiking, and camping, although you certainly prefer the cabin over sleeping on the ground.
Yep, I've done enough sleeping on the ground camping that I feel like I've graduated to the cabin camping. I'll go for the glamping now.
Yeah, it's funny. It was just over the weekend. My son's in Boy Scouts, and we were camping this weekend with the troop. We had a nice conversation on the drive home of whether we were glamping or not. And I said, I was like, I feel that if there is a running toilet, you are glamping.
Yes, I agree. I think that's the threshold. No, it's funny. Depending on what kind of camping you guys have been doing with Boy Scouts, like I've gone as rudimentary as basically having the tarp over your sleeping bag on the ground. So, and I've had those experiences where you know, you're sleeping, you wake up. I know it was a bear. The people I was with tried to be like, no, it wasn't a bear. I was like, I know what a bear sounds like. And you're just sitting there going like, please don't come into my, you know, glorified tarp tent. Please just keep walking. But incredible. Yeah.
I don't remember ever coming across anything that dangerous. Raccoons is usually the ones that I usually have to make sure that I put up all the food and everything else. It's the raccoons will get into everything.
Yeah, we were remote enough. It was, and again, an amazing trip, awesome trip. But you, like bears will make that chuffing noise kind of when they're smelling and you can hear them. And it was middle of the night. And sure enough, when we ended up coming down, some people were saying that a bear, and I think she had a cub, had been seen up there the past couple of days. And I was like, oh yeah, glad to come down off of that mountain. But I love camping. I love the outdoors.
Well, I am glad you had the sense of fear. And you didn't, you know, have somebody grab a camera and try to secure crocodile hunter days.
You never feel quite so exposed as when you're in one of those mummy sleeping bags and you're like, I can't do anything. I'm so like tight down in here. You just cross your fingers.
Yeah. So do you have a spot that you're looking forward to camping?
I really love going up to Canada. So Ontario has my heart. I love the lakes up there. If the zombie apocalypse happens, that's where I will be heading. So that's always where I think of.
You go up there fishing. What do you usually like to fish for?
Ooh, up there. So we fish for pickerel, which is walleye, and we call them jackfish up there, but northern pike, bass. Oh gosh, what else? Perch. I love it there. So there is a fish that I have always wanted to catch up there. And I've never been fortunate enough to. They're musky. We call them dreaded musky. They're super hard to catch. And there's a lake up there that's known to have them. And it's one of those that I've been to many times and gotten skunked every single time. And then it's funny, Lindsay just went to kind of a retreat in Minnesota, and she was talking about how people there were catching musky left and right. And I was like, maybe that's where I need to go. Like, I've got to do it.
Yeah, let's get a training up there. We can.
I know. I was like, how can we make this happen? I've got to catch it. And I'm a big catch and release person. So yeah, I'm like, I just need to land one. They're supposed to be super hard to reel in, just really fun fish. And then they look all super mean with giant teeth, and they'd be super fun to catch.
Yeah, I remember when I was like 12 years old, I caught a carp in my grandfather's pond, and it was a battle. Distinct memory in my mind. It was so awesome, just the battle going on.
Oh, yeah.
I was able
feel
to
like old man in the sea, like trying to reel in.
Yeah, because normally, I mean, you catch some of these things, it's hardly any fight at all, you know, as long as you get them on the hook. But this one was a really, really good battle. So it was it was awesome. So I can appreciate the desire to take on the muskie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our last segment to the show is Words to the World. And this is where I give the guest the last word, and you can promote any idea that you wish. Adrian, what are your words to the world?
My words to the world are going to be for analysts, and we hit on it a little bit before. It's really advocate for yourself. You're only limited by what you're willing to try to do and the ways that you're willing to kind of learn and explore within your career. So spread your wings. The role of the analyst is expanding so much. So find what interests you. And then once you've done that, run with it and be sure to pay it forward to the next generation of analysts too.
Very good. Well, I leave every guest with you've given me just enough to talk bad about you later. But I do appreciate you being on the show, Adrian. Thank you so much, and you be safe.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today on Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. We hope you not only enjoyed the show, but also learned something new. For more information on our guests and information relating to today's topic, please visit our website at leapodcasts.com. Special thanks to The Rough and Tumble for our theme song. For more of their music, you can visit their website at theroughandtumble.com. Also, thanks to Kyle McMullen for our show logo. For more of his design, please visit his website at moderntype.com. The show is hosted, recorded, and edited by Jason Elder and written by me, Mindy. You can contact us both via the LEA podcast website. Please join us again next time as we interview another expert in this great field.